Proverbs. Been looking at the book of Proverbs. We're going to look at chapter 9. Proverbs chapter 9. In the first 8 chapters of Proverbs, wisdom is often personified in the feminine gender. We see that is so in chapter 1. We see it again in chapter 3, chapter 4, and we saw it last week in chapter 8. And we see the same thing here in chapter 9. Wisdom hath builded her house. She hath hewn out her 7 pillars. Not only is wisdom personified in this chapter, we see that sin is personified as well under the emblem of a foolish woman. We see that in verse 13, a foolish woman. And it goes on to give her description, but it's the personification of sin, which of course is the rival of wisdom. So what we have in this chapter is, in the first 12 verses, we have the call of wisdom. We have wisdom, again, she calling out. And then beginning with verse 13 through the end of the chapter, we see the foolish woman, or sin, makes her call as well. The call goes to the same group of people in verse 4 concerning wisdom's call. We read, "Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that lacketh understanding, she saith to him." And then notice in verse 16 concerning the call of the foolish woman, "Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. And as for them that wanteth understanding, she saith to him." So the call goes out to those that are simple, those who lack understanding, those who are ignorant of spiritual truths. And wisdom calls them, sin calls them. What we have here between wisdom and sin, these two women making their call, we of course have two competing calls. But there's also two world views, and that's how it is today. There's the wisdom, there's sin. You have two world views. You have two alternatives. You have wisdom, you have sin, or foolishness. You have two ways, two philosophies of life. And these two calls, these two world views, these two alternatives, these two ways, these two philosophies of life are always calling. Everywhere you go, you hear the call of wisdom. Everywhere you go, you also hear the call of foolishness. You hear that call of sin. So we see these two have been making their calls, of course, since the fall, since the Garden of Eden. So we want to look mostly at the call of wisdom. We see the call of wisdom here in verses 1 through 12. And then in verses 13 through 18, we have the call of the foolish woman, or the call of sin, or the call of folly, however you want to look at it. But in both cases, it appears that the woman has made a feast, and she's calling out for those to come in and partake of this feast. In verses 1 and 2, we see the rich provision which wisdom has made. It says that wisdom hath builded her house. She hath hewn out her 7 pillars. The house of wisdom. Again, just remember everything we've said about wisdom in the first 8 chapters. It's something that we are to pursue. But the house of wisdom here has 7 pillars. That speaks of strength. That speaks of beauty. And so it is with wisdom. The instruction, the counsels of wisdom will give strength to your life. The instruction and counsels of foolishness will bring weakness and instability to your life. But we see the counsels and instructions of wisdom bring stability. They bring strength.
They not only strengthen and stabilize life, but they also beautify life. And that's what's represented by these seven pillars. We see also she hath killed her beasts, verse 2. She hath mingled her wine. She hath furnished her table. Again, this is wisdom. And the idea here is that there is a feast that has been prepared by wisdom. A table prepared. Psalm 23 in verse 5, he prepares a table for us. And we see the same thing in Psalm 78. So we see a table prepared speaks of love. A table prepared speaks of care. A table prepared speaks of forethought of the preparer. But it also speaks of the provision and fellowship for the guest at the table. So wisdom has a table. You and I are invited every day to sit down at that table. We are invited every day to partake of the feast of wisdom, which of course is just the instruction and counsel of wisdom. And by partaking of the feast of wisdom, by partaking of the instruction and the counsel of wisdom, we're stabilized. We have stability in our life, and we have strength, and we have beauty. And then we see in verse 3 through 6, she gives forth the invitation, she hath sent forth her maidens. She crieth upon the highest places of the cities. She, that is wisdom, hath sent forth her maidens, which could refer to preachers, could certainly refers to any instructor in righteousness. These are her maidens. These are the ones who give out the call of wisdom. We see she crieth in the highest places of the city. This is her invitation. This is the proclamation of wisdom. And we see it's a public call. Again, the call goes out to everyone. The call of wisdom, the instruction of wisdom, the counsel of wisdom is everywhere. Everywhere you go, there's the instruction to do right. There's the counsel to do right, to do the right thing. That's the call, and that's the cry of wisdom. And the cry goes out to the foolish to just simply do the right thing. And then down in verse 5, we see, Come, eat of my bread, and drink of the wine which I have mingled. Again, this is an invitation to wisdom's table. And again, it conveys the idea of a spiritual feast. It conveys the idea of a spiritual feast that has been prepared and that is available for you and I. In the parable of the Great Supper in Luke chapter 14 and verse 18, we read, "Come, for all things are ready." And that's the call of wisdom. Come. All things are ready. Everything you need. Everything you need to do what's right. Everything you need is ready. It doesn't have to be made ready. It's ready right now. And then he goes on in verse 6. Notice what must, again in verse 5, notice the first word of verse 5 is the word come. Now in order to come, something we have to do. And we see that in verse 6. Forsake the foolish and live and go in the way of understanding. Those words reveal what is required of those who come to wisdom's table. If you're going to do the right thing, the first thing you have to do is you have to forsake the foolish. You have to leave the foolish. You have to leave the ways of folly. There has to be a separation that takes place. If we're going to follow the counsel and instruction of wisdom, we have to leave the ways of foolishness. And this is why many today will not listen to the instruction of wisdom. This is why they will not take heed to the counsel of wisdom, because they absolutely refuse to forsake the way of foolishness. But again, if you're going to partake of this feast, if you're going to receive the benefits of this feast of wisdom, you have to forsake You have to be willing to leave the foolish. Most people, they have an interest in the instruction of wisdom. They have an interest in the counsel of wisdom, but they do not want to forsake. They do not want to leave that which is foolish. And again, if we're going to benefit from wisdom's instruction, if we're going to be wise ourselves, we have to forsake the foolish. But it goes further than that. It's not just forsaking the foolish. You can't just forsake the foolish and stop there. It says, forsake the foolish and go. And go in the way of understanding. You have to forsake the wrong way, and you have to go in the right way. Notice, if you keep a mark there in Proverbs chapter 9 and turn to Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55. Verse 7. It says, let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. But that's not enough. And let him, the wicked and the unrighteous, return unto the Lord. That's the same thing that we're reading in Proverbs 9. Forsake the foolish. Go in the way of righteousness. Go in the way of understanding. Here it is, forsake the wicked must forsake his way. The unrighteous must forsake his own ideas. And let him return unto the Lord. And he will have mercy upon him and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. So there has to be a forsaking of foolishness. The call goes out. The counsel and the instruction of wisdom is everywhere. It's not hid. She makes her call upon the hilt, upon the highest places of the city. It's not hid. It's not some secret. It's not some mystery. The call goes out. But the foolish must forsake their own ways. Notice also there in verse 6, forsake the foolish and live. That's living. Most people think that, well, if you forsake the foolish, you're going to somehow miss out on life. But it's forsake the foolish and live. That's where enjoyment is found. That's where real life is found, in leaving that which is wrong. So if we're going to partake of wisdom, we have to forsake the foolish. And then in verses 7 through 9, it says here, he that reproveth, and the word reproveth means reprimand, admonish. If you reprimand or admonish a scorner, that individual getteth shame, getteth to himself shame. Now the scorner, the reason that's written there is because the scorner is one who is not going to forsake the ways of foolishness. A scorner is one who is not going to partake of the benefits of wisdom. A scorner, by definition, is one who treats the things of God with open contempt and disrespect. They have a contempt for the things of God. They have a disrespect for the things of God. And they are not afraid to let you know that they have a contempt for the things of God. They are not afraid to let you know that they have a disrespect for the things of God. That is the scorner. Now, wisdom, the very instruction of wisdom, the very counsels of wisdom, reprimands and admonishes the scorner. But the scorner will not listen. Notice in Proverbs 13, Proverbs 13 in verse 1. A wise son heareth his father's instruction. A wise person listens. But notice what it says, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. They don't want rebuke. They don't want to be admonished. They don't want to be reprimanded. Notice in Proverbs 15 and verse 12, a scorner loveth not one that reproveth him, neither will he go unto the wise. And if you try to reprimand or admonish a scorner, you will be ridiculed. You'll be ridiculed. And that's what this is saying here. He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame. The point here is, though, that the scorner does not receive the reproof, the reprimand of wisdom, and therefore the scorner does not partake of wisdom's feast. The scorner does not partake of the benefits of wisdom. The scorner refuses to forsake his way. And then it goes on, he says, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. A wicked man is one who is bent on wickedness. And when you rebuke that individual, you have now become the object of slander. But again, the point is, the wicked man does not receive the rebuke of wisdom, and therefore, again, he does not partake of wisdom's feast. Verse 8 says, reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Now, I believe the warning here is the warning of casting pearl before swine. It's not that we're never to rebuke a scorner. It's not that we're never to rebuke a wicked man. But you had better be careful that you, in your rebuking, you are not simply giving him more opportunity to blaspheme God and to speak evil of truth. Notice in Proverbs 23, Proverbs 23, verse 9. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of thy words. There comes a time when you've rebuked a fool, you've tried to instruct the fool, you've tried to counsel him, but all he does is blaspheme more and more. There comes a time when you need to stop and just leave him alone and just turn him over to God. Let God deal with them. Now notice in Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. This is what Jesus is talking about. Matthew chapter 7, verse 6. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs. Neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you. You rebuke an individual and he blasphemes. You rebuke him again, he blasphemes again. And you continue to do that and he continues to blaspheme. Quit casting pearl before swine. Leave him alone. You say, well, I've got a burden for him. Get burden enough to pray for him. Give him to the Lord. It's obvious that your speaking to him is not going to get the job done. The Lord has to do it. So you do not cast pearl before swine. But the point of here in Proverbs chapter 9, these individuals, the scorner, the wicked man, will not listen to the instruction, will not listen to the counsel of wisdom. And therefore they will not partake of the benefits. But then notice what it says in Proverbs 9 and verse 9. Give instruction to a wise man, And that instruction can be teaching, it can be a reprimand, doesn't matter. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. So, rebuke a wise man, verse 8, and he will love thee. That's the opposite of the scorner. That's the opposite of the wicked man. You see, a wise man is conscious of his own failings. But more important than that, a wise man desires to be right. A wise man desires to do the right thing. And therefore, when you reprove, you reprimand a wise man, he appreciates it. Well, he may not enjoy it at the time, but he comes to appreciate it because he's wise. And that individual can partake of wisdom's feast. Notice in Psalm 141, notice what the psalmist says in Psalm 141 in verse 5. Let the righteous smite me. It shall be a kindness. Let him reprove me. It shall be an excellent oil, which shall not break my head. For yet my prayer also shall be in their calamities. Here was one who wanted to be reproved. If he did wrong, he wanted to be reprimanded. He wanted somebody who had wisdom to tell him, you're doing wrong, and here's what you need to do. Then notice in Proverbs 27, verse 6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. That's talking about rebuke. That's talking about reproof. It's talking about reprimands. The wise man will hear, and therefore the wise man can partake of the feast. But the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. So we see who it is that will not partake of the feast of wisdom. The scorner, the wicked man. Who it is that will partake of the feast of wisdom. And then if we go back to Proverbs chapter 9, we again have the foundation and message of wisdom. The fear of the Lord. We've read this before in Proverbs. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's the foundation of wisdom's instruction. That's the foundation of wisdom's counsel. The fear of the Lord. That is a reverence for God. So wisdom's call is a call to reverence God. And that's where you start. That's where you start with people. You have to reverence the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. As long as someone's heart is not right toward God, they are not going to do right. They are not going to be right. The fear of the Lord. This is the foundation. And Proverbs has much to say about the fear of the Lord and what it will do for us. Notice in Proverbs 10, verse 27, the fear of the Lord prolongeth days. That is, the fear of the Lord makes us full of life. The fear of the Lord causes us to live life abundantly. If you want to enjoy life, if you want to live life abundantly, fear God. That is, have a reverential awe of the Lord. Proverbs 14, verse 26. In the fear of the Lord is strong confidence, and his children shall have a place of refuge. In the fear of the Lord is strong confidence. When one has a reverence for God, and this is wisdom's call, wisdom always tells us to fear God. Wisdom always tells us to give due respect and due honor and due glory to God. That is always the instruction of wisdom. Wisdom will never tell you to forsake God. Wisdom will never tell you to draw further from God. Wisdom will tell you just the opposite. This is the foundation of wisdom's instruction. Fear the Lord. And those who fear the Lord are confident. This isn't a self-confidence. This is a confidence in the Lord. This is assurance. Those who have reverence for God have assurance. Then notice Proverbs 14, verse 27. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death. Again, it's a fountain of life. Again, it causes one to live life abundantly. But not only that, it causes you to escape the many snares that the devil lays, to depart from the snares of death. To have a reverence for God will spare your life. To have a reverence for God will save your life. It will keep you from ruining your life. But the scorner and the wicked man who are bent on their own ways, they fall into the snares. They are the ones who bring ruin and destruction to their lives, and they refuse to listen to the instruction and counsel of wisdom. One who has reverence for God will be humble and therefore receive instruction. Notice in Proverbs 15, verse 33, the fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility. Proverbs 16 and verse 6, by mercy and truth iniquity is purged, and by the fear of the Lord men depart from evil. Reverence to God will cause you to depart from evil. Now, if reverence for God causes you to depart from evil, what does irreverence do? Causes you to go toward evil. And that's the characteristic of the scorner. That's the characteristic of the wicked man. And then notice in Proverbs 19, verse 23, the fear of the Lord tendeth to life. Again, there's that abundant life. And he that hath it shall abide satisfied. Fear of God gives contentment in your life. To reverence God gives contentment. The wicked man, the scorner, always wants more. But the one who fears God has an inward contentment, has an inward peace. Proverbs 23, verse 17. Let not thine heart envy sinners, but, that is, instead of envying sinners, be thou in the fear of the Lord all the day long. Reverence for God will keep you from envying the wicked. You and I have no reason to envy ever the wicked man. And when we have a proper respect toward God, we will not envy the wicked, will not envy their life, will not envy anything about them. Oh, how many times a child of God will say, oh, I wish I could be so-and-so. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You ought to be ashamed. Child of God should never wish to be anything other than what he is, a child of God. So the fear of God is the foundation of wisdom. The fear of God. If we go back to Proverbs 9, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. That is, knowledge of holy things. Spiritual knowledge increases our insight. The individual who has the most insight as far as life is concerned is the one who has the best understanding of the Word of God. The Word of God gives us insight. And that's part of wisdom, is having this insight. So the knowledge of the holy is understanding, or is
insight, and it is a reason for joy. Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 24. If you know God, you ought to rejoice in the fact that you know God. And Jesus said in John 8, verses 31 and 32, if you know the truth shall set you free. Knowledge, spiritual knowledge, will set you free and will liberate you from error and may save your life. And then notice in verse 11 and 12 of Proverbs chapter 9, for by me, understanding and wisdom, thy days shall be multiplied, and the years of thy life shall be increased. Again, I believe that speaks of a fullness of life. You do the right thing. You do what God says, and you'll never come out in the short end. Never. Oh, it may appear that you've come out in the short end. It may cost you a job, and you may say, I lost my job. No, you haven't come out in the short end. You never come out in the short end by doing right. Never. It gives us fullness of life. So if you ever even think, if the thought even goes through your mind, I did right, and now look what happened. You're looking at it wrong. You've got the wrong perception, because you never come out in the short end. It is fullness of life. And wisdom always tells us to do the right thing. And he goes on, he says, if thou be, in verse 12, if thou be wise, thou shalt be wise for thyself. But if thou scornest, thou alone shalt bear it. What that is saying is, the individual who has reverence for the Lord profits himself. You personally profit. You personally benefit. And the individual who pursues foolishness, he is an individual who opposes themselves. You know, people many times get the idea, everybody's against me. I try to do right, but everybody's against me. No, everybody's not against you. But I'll tell you this, your worst enemy, if you refuse the ways of wisdom, it's not that everybody else is against you, you're against yourself. Notice in 1 Timothy, or 2 Timothy, chapter 2, verse 25. Paul instructing Timothy in the ministry. He says in verse 25, in meekness, instructing. And then notice, instructing those that oppose themselves. That's what the scorner does. That's what the wicked man does. And that's what Proverbs 9, verse 12 is talking about. You don't do right. You refuse the instruction. You refuse the counsel of wisdom. You insist on pursuing in the ways of foolishness. You are an opposer to your own self. You are your own enemy. And you are bringing ruin to your life. They oppose themselves and they refuse to listen to the instruction and counsel of wisdom. Again, as we've said many times, it's always somewhat mystifying that someone whose life is in complete ruins can come and talk to a child of God whose life is not in ruins, who has a very good life, and yet they refuse to listen to him as if they don't know what they're talking about. But that's the way of the foolish man. That's the way of the scorner. They refuse to listen. And then notice, in closing, in verses 13 through 18, we have the invitation, the call and feast, if you will, of foolishness or sin. A foolish woman. She represents here sin and folly. And what is said of her is that she is clamorous. That is, she's noisy. She's loud. She's insistent. Now, there's some advice here also for men. You better stay away from the clamorous woman. All through the Bible, she's nothing but trouble. We see 1 Peter 3, verses 1 through 4, it's a meek and quiet spirit that is pleasing to the Lord. But this foolish woman, she's noisy. She's loud. She's insistent. But though she is clamorous, representing foolishness, take her as representing foolishness, her message is empty. And though she is insistent in her call, her message is empty. It is also said of her that she is simple. She is simple. That is, she is disposed to err and sin. And then it goes on to say, and knoweth nothing. Now, isn't it amazing? Wisdom hath builded her house. She hath hewn out her seven pillars. Brings stability and strength to life. And yet many times the instruction of wisdom, the counsel of wisdom, is ignored and despised. On the other hand, you have this clamorous woman. She's simple. She's full of error. She knows nothing. And yet people listen to her message. The message of foolishness. The message of folly. Notice, she sitteth at the door of her house. She sits on the high, on a seat in the high places of the city. Again, it's a public call. This is no secret call, just like wisdom's call is no secret. It's a public call. Both the call of wisdom and both the call of foolishness is a public call. To call passengers who go right on their ways. And then notice her message, verse 7. Stolen waters are sweet. The phrase stolen waters has reference to adultery. That's what it's talking about. Stolen waters. That which is wrong. That which is sinful. Her message is that it is sweet. That is, that it's something to be enjoyed. And is that not the message of folly? Is that not the message of sin today? You do what's wrong. You do what's contrary to God. But you'll have a good time. That's the message. That's the call of foolishness. And then it goes on. So she puts the emphasis. Stolen waters are sweet. The emphasis there is upon sweet. She puts the emphasis upon the pleasure. And that's what the world wants today. They want pleasure. So the message, the call, the invitation of folly is a message that the world loves to hear. Because she promises pleasure. Keep in mind, she's simple. She knoweth nothing. But she promises pleasure. And bread eaten in secret. Key word there, secret. And again, she says, is pleasant. Putting emphasis upon pleasure. Twofold emphasis. Pleasure and secrecy. And is that not the message of sin? You'll have a good time. It'll be fun. It'll be fun. How many young people have been ruined? It'll be fun. You don't want to miss out on this. This will be fun. That's the message of folly. It is in secret. Mom and dad don't have to know. The church doesn't have to know. It's in secret. They'll never find out. That's the message. That's the emphasis upon foolishness. Keep in mind, she's clamorous, she's loud, she's insistent. The message is just, it's a continual pounding. She's insistent in her message, but keep in mind, she knows nothing. She doesn't know what she's talking about. When they say it'll be fun, they don't know what they're talking about. When they say it's in secret, no one will ever know. They don't know what they're talking about. Again, we have a contrast here between the call of wisdom and the call of foolishness. Verse 18 speaks of those that give heed to the voice of folly, but he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that our guests are in the depths of hell. I would much rather be the guest of wisdom than the guest of folly. So there are two calls that go forth today. There is the instruction and the counsel of wisdom. And all God's people should give heed to that instruction, should give heed to that counsel. How many would have saved themselves many a pain, many a hurt, many a heartache, if they would have just listened to the instruction and counsel of wisdom? And how many would have spared themselves much misery had they not given heed to the clamorous woman, to the voice, to the invitation of sin, to the invitation of folly. So the two calls go out, wisdom and foolishness. They're not hid. They both sit in the high places, and they both loudly proclaim their ways. Which are we going to listen to today? We pray that our ways would always be inclined toward the ways of wisdom. Let's all stand, Brother Larry, if you'd come.